Hi, I'm Polina.
And I'm Peter.
Welcome to Step Into Extraordinary,
the podcast for
go-getters, big dreamers, and overachievers.
Join us as we discover what it takes to tap into the extraordinary.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Tap Into Extraordinary podcast. I'm so excited to bring you this conversation. I probably say this every week, but when you have so many inspirational guests on season two, it's still valid week on. So I'm very excited today to be bringing on the podcast Rebecca Clark. So Rebecca is, in my opinion, the definition of making an impact and still being very true to your purpose in life. And she is the founder of Happy Marlow, a community and digital platform which combines the best in emotional wellness for children aged 6 to 11 years old. She's also a very seasoned social impact communication specialist with over 20 years expanding career across international communications. So with that said, I'm going to let her introduce all the other amazing things that she's doing, because I'm literally only reading one paragraph from her bio and there's another six. This is how much she's doing to make an impact and make the world a better place. So Rebecca, welcome to the podcast. So great to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks, Polina, for that warm welcome. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Lovely. So with that, I think it might be worth just asking you to tell us a bit more about yourself and what do you do. Tell us a bit more about Happy Marlow and all the other things that you're involved in.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, Happy Marlow, we're on a mission to empower 6 to 11-year-olds to provide them with holistic resources and tools so they can really support themselves. And we can support families on children's emotional well-being. This idea came about before the pandemic. You know, I started to become increasingly aware, I think we all are really, around the discussion of mental health. But was really focusing on the fact that growing up is challenging. You know, there are inevitable ups and downs. It's a really difficult, tricky period of one's life. And I was very aware that for a lot of adults, grown-ups, we can often be carrying around unresolved trauma or hurt from things that have happened in our younger years. And as I explored that further, I really felt that there's an opportunity that we can do more to support children while they're growing through that period, to really help them flex their emotional muscles early on and to put some resources, as I said, directly in their hands that they become familiar with and can turn to at any time. So I mentioned we focus on holistic modalities. So Happy Marlow is around three pillars, if you like, of breath work, emotional freedom technique, which is also known as tapping, and the third being sound healing. I'm very familiar with these modalities because I myself have used them and found them so beneficial. And what I love about them is that they're gentle, but they're hugely effective and impactful. And so it was with that insight that I really felt if we worked with these modalities and tailored them for young people in a way that makes them accessible and fun, and they can witness firsthand the impact and difference that they can make to them, then there's the potential to be a real game changer there. And so that's what we're really excited about at Happy Marlow, and that's the mission there. And then in terms of my broader background, I as you said, a seasoned social impact communicator. I've been working in communications and campaigns, as you said, for over 20 years now, and very much in the space of issues that matter to us all. I worked for the UK government for just under 8 years in a variety of departments, working in different policy areas. And then I actually lived in the UAE for 5 years and did quite a bit of work with the UAE government and different departments there around foreign policy and soft power, and worked on some really interesting, fascinating projects around global health issues, around girls' education, and got to work with some incredible organizations in that space, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the World Health Organization and others. And so at this point, professionally, it's really been a lovely opportunity to take those experiences and really bring all of those elements around communicating and engaging audiences and weaving that into the work that we're doing with Happy Marlowe. Because mental health, emotional health is critical. We know that now more than ever because of what's been going on this past 18 months. And UNICEF came out last year and said it's, you know, children and young people's emotional well-being and mental health is going to be one of the longest kind of impacts that we see as a result of what's going on. And so there's an opportunity for many of us to find ways that we can support children and their families in the months and years ahead.
Listening to you speak there, obviously a lot of what you do now is around making sure that there's a positive impact. I mean, certainly for children, they said that the first 5 years are really important and really impactful. I wonder, because obviously you've done quite a bit in terms of comms, working for UK government and UAE government, as you've just described there. I'm interested to know how you've gone from working in those environments to now having Happy Marlowe as your point of where you feel you can make the most positive impact. Was there a particular change or anything like that along your journey that got you to this point?
I turned 40 a few years ago, and I think like a lot of big birthdays, those milestones can be a real time of reflection. And I was really excited about turning 40. I saw it as a positive thing, but I definitely felt that there were some changes that I wanted to make in my life. And as I said, I've been having a really great time working on lots of different projects, working with big organizations. But I knew that there was something that felt like it was still missing. On a personal level, I was also, my husband and I were hoping to have a baby as well. So it did, it really felt like this crossroads, and almost like I would kind of say, and I can be a bit theatrical, you know, it's a second part, it's the beginning of a second half of my life. And so that was wanting to have a baby and start a family, which we do have a little 2-year-old, which is lovely. But I also felt that in some ways, I don't know, at times, I think like many of us, I was almost compartmentalizing some of myself, you know, not to say that I was a completely different person at work, because I wasn't, and I'm not, but I really wanted to find a way that I could bring all of the parts of myself into my work and the impact that I'm creating. And so it was during that period, you know, turning 40 and the next kind of 18 months really of exploration and getting curious about different things and asking questions about, well, what does that look like? And what could it mean? And a couple of things that came up, you know, I would describe myself as a spiritual person. It's not an accident that Happy Marlowe is kind of rooted in these holistic, but I will say science-backed methods, because I've always been very open and curious to different ways of doing things. To give some context, you know, my early years were quite challenging. I was taken into emergency foster care when I was 10 months old. And then subsequently adopted by my family when I was 3. And so that, you know, presented some challenges in terms of growing up. And I mentioned that because it was really, you know, as part of my own healing journey over many years, it took many different forms, you know, from going from traditional talking therapies or CBT to trying Reiki and tapping and sound healing and all of these different things. And so kind of then returning to that period that I described and turning 40 in that moment of real reflection, one of the things that kind of resonated was this idea of your healing being your calling, or I think as Gail King, Oprah's best friend, would say, your message. I don't know if I've attributed that to the right person, but I found that really interesting. And so it's almost as though Well, let's really kind of get into that for me on a personal level. I think this is an interesting exercise for everyone to do. If that is true, what does that mean for me? What might that mean in terms of what more could I bring in terms of helping and support and contributing? And so I started to realize that there was something in that. Perhaps there's something in the fact that I had had those experiences as a child, and then the subsequent healing journey that I went on. Could I bring something to the world that might help other children or children today in some way? And people often say or ask me, oh, is Happy Marlo, you know, did you decide or come up with this because of your own daughter, since having Aura, my daughter? I go and say, well, yeah, it is for Aura, as it is for other children. But the truth is, it's really been a journey of, it's a gift to my inner child. That's really what it's about. That's where it came from. And that's why I knew it. That's what makes it really personal, Peter, I think. Whereas all of these other, you know, missions and campaigns, really, really, really important and really meaningful. But it was almost like just up-leveling it to the next notch of how can I make it really from my heart, and the gift that I am, a legacy that I would like to create on a personal level.
Yeah, that's a great insight. And this probably leads us on to my next question, which is, you know, how have you found it, like kind of taken a step back from obviously the career pressures and all that kind of stuff to really kind of achieve that balance in life and what you feel you want to deliver in terms of a real positive impact? Have you found that it was difficult to do, or was it a relatively easy transition to it?
I wouldn't say it were easy. And there was also some pain in going through that process. When we've spoken previously, and we're talking about the ability to have space sometimes to explore, to question. And I mean, it's a privilege if you're able to do that, right? Because you need to work, but for most of us, bills need to be paid, food needs to be put on the table. And for me, it was where that kind of year, 18 months, I got pregnant, as I mentioned, which was great, but I kind of saw my consultancy disappear in front of my eyes. And as the months went on, and, you know, and kind of going to meetings all the time and trying to do business development, it was this very odd moment for me, because it was the best of times in terms of this baby is coming, which is an absolute gift. And worst of times, like, hang on, what's happened to my career? What's happened to my, you know, my ability to earn money? And that was very scary. And then when that kind of continued, you know, obviously took some time off after I had Aura and maternity, but then I still wasn't, there weren't clients waiting for me to come back. It wasn't like there was a switch of, and now back to work. And so it was a very odd time of, okay, well, I'm getting this opportunity to really think about what it is I want to do next and what might that look like. But there was some fear around that too, because, you know, I wanted to be working in some way, and that just wasn't happening at that time. And so it was really a challenge to find the balance around that. And I think that can be difficult for everyone, because, you know, how often do we really have the luxury of, you know, taking a sabbatical or taking any time? And I think particularly in terms of what's happened for everyone on a collective level this past year or so, a lot of people have been in and needed to be in survival mode. There's no time for, you know, what's my dream, or how do I, we've just been trying to get through it. And so I'm very conscious of that. And I think, I don't know what the answer is, because I think it's very personal for everyone. It depends what your personal circumstances are. But one of the things that I do think is kind of available to all of us, which I have found really a game changer for me, is around my daily meditation practice. And that is something that I'd been, you know, friends, another, you know, wise people had recommended this to me for years. And I was like, yeah, just can't quite get into it. But I was part of a coaching cohort during this period. And one of the things, one of the homework really, was this kind of 10 minutes a day of meditation. And that really helped crack it for me, because I was kind of being told what to do, which sometimes I need. But then I started at least to see the benefits. And I think meditation, the word, can be quite off-putting to a lot of people. I think it can feel intimidating. I think it can feel really woo-woo to some people. Like, what is that? And one of my dear friends, you know, put it in the simplest terms of, it's just a moment of quiet. You know, it's as simple as that. You don't have to do anything in particular. You don't have to have the wind chimes and have a guided visualization. It can simply be, which is my interpretation of putting, you know, a 10-minute timer on my phone, closing my eyes and just having some peace and quiet and just focusing on my breath for those moments. And when you think about it that way, just finding 10 minutes, which I would really like to think we can all do that, regardless of the challenges that are going on in our day, it can make such a difference. And I find that is really powerful in terms of grounding and balance. And being able to come back to that, so that when life is up and down, because of course it is, it's just I find myself, I can recover a bit quicker, or the tears aren't necessarily as easy to come in the way that they might have been before. There still are tears sometimes, but I've definitely seen it's just really helped me kind of ground myself and feel a bit more rooted on a more regular basis.
Something I wanted to ask you in there when you were talking about something that I find quite fascinating, and I want to see how it impacted you. When you were talking about your pregnancy and your career slowly fading away in front of your eyes, at least temporarily, the consultancy that you had at the time, did you, or how did you feel that impact your self-worth or the way you perceived yourself as someone who I imagine career was very and hugely important to you previously? How would you say that impacted the way you perceive yourself and your identity?
Yeah, I mean, Pauline, hugely. It was really sad. There was a sadness that I felt, because I'm like, hang on, I'm girl about town. I've got events to go to and people to talk to and things to do. And I just wasn't doing that anymore. And so I was very aware of my identity and worth being wrapped up in that. Why I felt, you know, and I could feel really sorry for myself at times. Why doesn't anyone want to employ me? Or what's going on here? What have I done wrong to deserve this? You know, again, theatrical, but there was a very strong sense of that. And I remember specifically getting on the bus to go into Finsbury Park one day. It was the start of the month, and just feeling so sad. I was kind of looking outside, these people going around their business. I didn't feel like I was part of the game, that I was involved anymore. And I definitely missed that, because, you know, one of the things that brings me joy is being around people and having common purpose, common cause, and feeling that I'm contributing to something. And I think that's because the way that my career has gone, in the main, I've always worked in that impact space. You know, one of my old bosses in government, Richard Meakin, would always say, well, we're not in the business of selling biscuits, are we? You know, there's always this sense that what we were doing was meaningful and was helpful. And so, yeah, to not be part of, or feel that I wasn't part of that was definitely distressing.
Yeah, and I think it's just, there's a much bigger conversation there around like how much of our identities are tied to what we do and our careers. I think in this day and age, we put so much emphasis on what you do. Like the minute you meet someone new, the first question we ask is, what do you do? And I think there's a larger conversation there of like, how reliant are we on that being a huge part of our identity? But then even when temporarily it's taken out of the equation with things like pregnancy or like sickness or whatever, maybe career breaks, even like how much of an impact it has on, I guess, our mental state and just that inner equilibrium, inner peace and confidence in your own abilities. So it's quite interesting. So thank you for sharing that. The other thing that I wanted to ask you of is, I think, although it has not always been the easiest, I do think you have managed to find that balance of making an impact and being true to yourself throughout your career. And I wanted to know, how have you found that? How have you found finding that balance? Because I'm sure for a lot of people listening to this now, they would be thinking, well, it's one or the other. Like, it's really hard to be true to yourself and still be making an impact at the scale that they may want to do. So
I think there is something around being really honest with yourself. So honest, you knowing first of all, you've got to know yourself first of all, to be true to yourself, and then make decisions accordingly in line with that. It's almost like setting yourself a little list of criteria, like, if I take this opportunity, or if I, you know, work for this company, is it going to deliver A, B, and C for me or not? You know, it's that concept where people talk about, is it a hell yes or is it a hell no? And if it's not a hell yes, then you shouldn't be doing it. And again, that can be much easier said than done, because sometimes you might need to take a gig because you need the money that month, whatever it is. And so there's sometimes there is compromise, but I think there's something, particularly the older I get, around having that compass or being really clear on that, that just helps you come back to what is important to me. Is this allowing me to maintain my integrity in terms of what I'm doing? And is this going to bring me some joy? Because that's really, it's a really important thing. And even when you're doing serious work, it doesn't mean we need to be serious all the time. It's actually very important that we can find ways, you know, through creativity, through human connection with the other people that you're collaborating with, that we're bringing joy, that we're bringing light to these things. Otherwise, it's too much. And I think it can actually end up being counterproductive.
I would agree with that. I think everything is compromised to a certain extent, and you have to kind of find where you feel comfortable with that balance between tipping between what you feel is true to you and what actually isn't. But it's always going to be a moving kind of like target in most circumstances. I completely agree with what you're saying there. I guess in kind of like, we ask this as the last question to every episode, and we get different answers to this question. We'd really love to know what your what extraordinary actually means to you personally on your journey.
Well, when I was thinking about this, and when I think about extraordinary, one of the things I find really extraordinary is the human spirit and our ability to bounce back, or to keep going, or to have blind faith, you know, even in the darkest of times, we as human beings are often able to find that glimmer of light, to find that piece of hope. And when I think of people who've had, you know, incredibly traumatic and life-changing experiences, and yet they are often the ones who are bringing, you know, people I'm really inspired by, like Viktor Frankl, for example, the Holocaust survivor, and others. I think we're all able to learn from those extraordinary individuals how we can be extraordinary, how we can, and I think that we all have the ability to be so. And it's for our own definition. But I would say it is the power of the human spirit, and that we are more powerful than any of us know.
I mean, this is so beautiful and it's so perfect, especially for like myself in this moment in life. I think it resonates so much. I have just achieved something that I kind of had like a blind faith for however many years. So this week, and I got into 35 under 35 by management today. And like when I found my, a post that I had made 6 years ago saying that I want to get into that list one day. Mm. And at the time, I think it was very much like blind faith for like however many years it's going to happen at some point. And I think there is nothing like the power of the human spirit, and our belief is literally, as they say, to achieve something, you first have to believe that you could do it. And I think it's so relevant, like especially in this context of extraordinary to achieve anything extraordinary, you first have to believe that you have it. So I think, yes, when you go down extraordinary then, and what makes those people is that belief, is that ability to bounce back, to just have blind faith that it's going to happen at some point and just continue to put in the work however long it takes.
Congratulations, Paulina, by the way. And when you were speaking then, it reminded me of the unseen magic, because it's very interesting how often when we write down goals or write down things that we want to do, mm-hmm. more often than not, we wind up achieving them. And I think for me, it feels there's a combination, of course, you know, you've got to take inspired action, you've got to show up and do the work. But I also think that there's a strong element of the unseen magic. It's that thing of like when you make a decision to do something, the universe conspires to support you to achieve it. And I really believe in that.
Yeah. I mean, for our listeners, they obviously can't see that, but you can literally see my vision board behind me. I don't know if this is like my vision board. So it's being looked at and manifested daily until it happens. So yeah, there is.
Excellent.
Well, this was beautiful. There's so many little lessons in there. And I think it's, for me personally, was the fact that you were able to still succeed, still find your own inner calling in the healing. I'm definitely taking this away, and I'm going to be doing something around what's the healing that I need to do that might be my calling. So I think it's very interesting. And as someone who has done a lot of work on that inner voice, that inner child, I don't think many of us realize how our inner child is very closely related to that inner critic that we have, and like how they pretty much go hand in hand. And if you tackle that inner child, or at least build a better relationship with it, not necessarily tackle it, it's not a rugby tackle, it's more of a handholder, and like bring it to be your biggest supporter, you can have a much better relationship with your inner self, and which can then help you achieve a lot more and go further in life. So thank you so much for sharing everything that you just did and some of your personal experiences around the difficulties you faced on the way. But I think there's so much for people to take away from this, and I do hope they find it as inspirational as I did.
Yeah, actually, before we leave, Rebecca, why don't you let us know where we can find you and where listeners can find you as well?
Thank you. So in terms of Happy Marlo, we are at happymarlo.com. That's M-A-R-L-O. If you're on social media, please follow us at Instagram or Facebook, and that's at Happy Marlo Life. If you would like to subscribe to hear more, please do it at our website. And if anyone's listening who's going to be at Wilderness Festival in August, we are going to be there. We're part of the lineup in the sanctuary. So please come and see us.
Absolutely. So guys, there it is for this week's episode. Like we say at the end of all of this, hopefully you've now just take something from it, and just remember, don't be afraid to tap into your version of extraordinary, because at the end of the day, this is what it's all about. It's all about fulfillment and doing something that you feel gives you purpose as well. So until next week, we will catch you later on. So Huobi is a prime example of how DeFi can help people access financial products on the blockchain, right? And to say that this is revolutionary is an understatement. But equally, to say that everything is perfect in the world of DeFi would also be incorrect of me to... So Huobi is a prime example of how the blockchain and this DeFi can help people make better use of their money, gain better rates of interest with interest rates being so low. The reality is, though, that DeFi in itself, it's still very much in its infancy. And there are problems and issues that can arise. One of them is, you know, bugs and protocol changes. Bear in mind, this is based on technology, and this is being built on the blockchain right now. Protocol changes, bugs can cause a huge... So Huobi is a prime example of how DeFi can help people earn better rates of interest and access financial products and financial services using the blockchain. But because it is on the blockchain, means that So what will be his... So who will... So Huobi is a prime example of how DeFi can help people access financial products and financial services using the blockchain. In this example, you're able to access better rates of interest than you're able to get in your bank. Now, that doesn't mean that there are no risks when it comes to DeFi. There are absolutely some risks. This is all being built on the blockchain right now, which means that if you have any bugs or protocol changes, then that can potentially put things awry. You also have to think about network fees and congestion and all of these issues that could also be a big spanner in the work when it comes to DeFi. Now, DeFi at the moment is being built primarily on the Ethereum blockchain. And I think when we think about DeFi specifically, you have to think about where the investment opportunities are. And for many people, that will be Ethereum because a lot of it is being developed on Ethereum right now. But something else that is becoming a big conversation in the DeFi space is Bitcoin on DeFi. So DeFi being available using Bitcoin itself and not Ethereum or the Ethereum blockchain. And that, for me, I completely honest, I don't completely understand in itself, but it is extremely exciting, particularly bearing in mind that Bitcoin is the digital currency of the future. It is the store of value. Bitcoin does not necessarily need DeFi to be successful, whereas there are a lot of other applications and other things out there at the moment that are reliant on DeFi being a success in order for them to have that network effect and to have their value. Now, when you think about DeFi, you have to also think about how far this has actually come. I'm going to throw this... So Huobi is a prime example of how DeFi can be used to help people access financial products or financial services. I mean, in this example, you're able to access a better rate of interest than if you were using your bank. I mean, the banks are offering nothing right now. So Huobi is a prime example of how DeFi can be used to access better financial products and better financial services. I mean, in this case, you're getting a better interest rate than what is available at your bank. And this is where we get into the real conversation of money in the bank being eroded by inflation. Well, this offers a tangible alternative to that. And when you think about DeFi, you think about smart contracts, which is the ability for you to exchange a product or a service, have that commerce without the need for an intermediary, this means that it's open. This means that it can be quicker, it can be cheaper, it can be more transparent than having the middleman in a bank or a financial institution that basically means that you have to have that human intervention and that human guidance through that entire system. I mean, this is something that is going to revolutionize that in completely and utterly new ways. I mean, just think about being able to buy a property, but your deeds to the property are an NFT, and all you would need to do is buy the NFT in order to own the deeds to your property and complete on the mortgage on the blockchain. This is really, really mind-blowing stuff. But at this point in time, when it comes to DeFi, the most common user cases is in the world of lending and borrowing. But that is going to be expanding and growing in the future. I said this at a talk earlier. So Huobi is a prime example of being able to use DeFi to access better financial products or better financial services. In this particular example, you're using Huobi to access better rates of interest, which if you're using your bank right now, your cash is being eroded by inflation. So you don't have that dynamic when it comes to DeFi, and it is extremely exciting. But when you think about DeFi itself and the impact of things like smart contracts, which are essentially contracts which will enable you to complete transactions without an intermediary, you really get into the point of you don't need the banks or the financial institutions in order to act as that middleman in order for you to complete a transaction, like, for example, a mortgage. I mean, think about buying and completing on a mortgage, so buying a property where the deeds of your house are an NFT, and all you need to essentially do is to purchase the NFT in order to own your property via a mortgage that has been completed on the blockchain using DeFi. I mean, the most common user cases for DeFi at this point in time are borrowing and earning interest. Those are the two most common cases right now. And even when you look at borrowing specifically, there is so much room for growth with the technology as it's being built right now. Now, when it comes to DeFi, all of it, well, most of it is being built on top of the Ethereum blockchain right now. However, there is more and more of a conversation around Bitcoin on DeFi, which in itself, from doing research, is very, 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 very exciting. And when we talk about the uptake and the actual increase and uptake of DeFi, you just need to have a look at, you know, DeFi Pulse, for example. So Huobi is a prime example of people being able to use DeFi to access better financial products and better financial services. I mean, in this instance, you're looking at accessing a better rate of interest than what you're getting in your bank right now, where if by... So Huobi is a prime example. Of being able to use DeFi to access better financial products, better financial services. I mean, in this example, you're able to access a better rate of interest than what you're getting in your bank right now, which, if you are holding cash in your bank right now, is being eroded by inflation because the interest rates are so low. Now, the two most common user cases for DeFi right now are in borrowing and earning interest. And when you start to think about the impact that this could potentially have, particularly when you think about the borrowing side, I mean, imagine using a smart contract, which, by the way, is a contract which enables you to complete on a transaction. So that commerce, right? That exchange of goods and services. Imagine being able to buy a house and use an NFT to do so. So your deeds are an NFT and you purchase your house, you own the NFT, the deeds to your house via NFT with a mortgage that you got on the blockchain. The applications for this are far reaching and they are absolutely humongous. But when it comes to DeFi right now, most of it is being built on top of the Ethereum blockchain, which is malleable. It allows people to program things, but there is more and more of a discussion, and I found this out doing research for this video, around Bitcoin on DeFi, which is extremely exciting considering that Bitcoin is the premier global, well, cryptocurrency, really, is the global digital currency of the future, the store of value. That is getting a lot of people very, very excited indeed. But when I think about DeFi and I think about, okay, you watching this, what might be the investment opportunities? Well, it's being built on the Ethereum blockchain. We know that Ethereum 2.0 is due to arrive soon. That is going to introduce more efficiencies, less gas fees, so on and so forth. So hopefully we'll see a bit of this accelerate in the coming 12 months or so. The space has already been very, very busy over the last 2 to 3 years. It has really accelerated. And you can see that by this screenshot that I'm going to throw up right here, which is DeFi Pulse, which basically tells you the total value locked into the DeFi space right now. I mean, I did this yesterday at 66 billion. I don't even know what that might be today, whether it's increased or not, but go and check this out as well. So this is a very, very exciting space right now. But for an investment opportunity, Ethereum, I feel, is where it's going to be. I could be wrong with that, and I'm sure that people will tell me in the comments below, but it feels as though owning Ethereum and investing in Ethereum just for the application of DeFi and what this could say for the future could be a really, really good investment, particularly with Ethereum 2.0 coming down the track. So guys, there it is right there. This is just a video on DeFi and what I found, and I think it's very, very exciting. Will this replace the financial system all in one fell swoop? I don't think so. I think there are some very, very complex parts of the financial system that I'm not sure that DeFi would be able to replace in its entirety. But in the next 5 to 10 years, will it take a portion of or overtake a portion of the financial system? I believe it will, particularly when you think about the unbanked, those 1.7 billion people that don't have access to bank accounts, to ATMs, to loans, to mortgages. As long as you have a smartphone and an internet connection, and this is where things like Starlink come in, where they're beaming, you know, good Wi-Fi connection to every inch of the planet, this makes DeFi more viable. And 1.7 billion people being unbanked that will then have access to financial products, financial services can only be a good thing. And if you just think about catering to those people alone, this could be absolutely massive. The reality is, though, we don't know where this is going to go. I believe that with the blockchain, as exciting it is, there are so many new user cases that we don't even know about right now. And I'm certainly excited to see where this DeFi is going to be taking us in the next 5 to 10 years. But guys, let me know what you think about this video in the comments. If you've made it this far, thank you so much for watching. If you haven't already, make sure you smash the like button. Please do share this with somebody who may also find this interesting. And if you haven't subscribed already, consider subscribing. This is the podcast for this week. Go and listen to it right there. Remember, money is a tool, life is for living. I will catch you later on.